Okay, but before I start on questions, let me just clarify something because I realize it might not have been entirely clear. I was making this distinction between what I was calling the common sense view of inflation and unemployment and the Nehru. Okay, so let me just try and make that a little bit clearer since I may not have been entirely clear the first time. What I was calling the common sense view just says if we have lower unemployment, the economy is growing more rapidly, it's reasonable to believe other things equal that there'll be more inflationary pressure. And that's just for, you know, what I would consider a common sense thing. If there's low unemployment, workers have an easier time getting wage increases, getting better benefits. That raises cost. Employers are also more likely to be in a situation to pass on those costs than if we had high unemployment. So I just consider it sort of common sense. The distinction between that and the Nehru view is that the Nehru view is we have this cutoff, and again, it was 6% was what was widely believed, and if we're below that cutoff, if we're at 5% unemployment, then it's not just that inflation will get a little higher, it will continually rise. Okay, so we don't have the option of having, you know, the inflation rate go from 3% to, let's say, 3.5%, 3.75%, 4%. It will continue to rise. Okay, so what that means is if the unemployment rate stays below Nehru, eventually there is no way around hyperinflation, you know, because it just keeps going up and up and up. So the argument, if you believe that view, no one wants hyperinflation, so it doesn't make sense to say you want to keep the unemployment rate below the Nehru. Okay, so that was the distinction. I think the first one, it's hard to quarrel with. The second one, as I said, I don't think there's a good theoretical argument for it. There's not a widely agreed upon theoretical argument, and the evidence at this point clearly doesn't support it. Okay, so I'll take questions. Yes?
What, in your opinion, was it during the mid-90s then that allowed for the
Yeah, no acceleration of inflation. Okay, so the question is, what was it about the mid-90s that allowed for rapid growth and no acceleration of inflation? All right, well, I'll say two things. One was that we did have an upturn in productivity that was unanticipated. So what that meant was we had this long period of very low productivity growth, and suddenly we had this big surge in productivity beginning in the mid-90s, which gave us a lot of room. So other things equal, if we have higher productivity growth, workers can get higher wage increases without it leading to higher costs for firms because they're, in effect, being more efficient. So that was one reason. But the other reason was I don't buy the Nehru in the sense that I don't think that we necessarily would have had higher inflation even without, you know, this uptick in productivity growth. I just think the evidence on the whole for that was very weak, and it's totally plausible that even without the uptick in productivity growth, because I was arguing for this position along with a few other people before any of us saw this rise in productivity growth, I just think the evidence for that was fairly weak. So, you know, again, other things equal, lower unemployment is going to mean more inflation, but or more inflationary pressures, but I don't think that there was any reason to believe, even if we hadn't had this uptick in productivity growth, we would have had runaway inflation had the unemployment rate fallen. Okay. Yes?
So, if you were president of the Fed, would you say, well, the new Nehru cutoff is 4%?
Okay, so the question is, if I were calling the shots, if I were running the Fed, would I say that we could have 4% unemployment and go that route, even though there's the evidence on that's ambiguous, or would I simply allow the inflation rate to be higher? I guess I would focus on the unemployment rate. That's the variable that I would look to, and I would say that in general I would try to push the unemployment rate as low as possible until there was clear evidence that inflation was going to be a serious problem. I'm not so worried. They've created this mindset that if we start to see an acceleration of inflation, that it's just a disaster, and there really is not an evidence for that. We could all agree that we don't want hyperinflation. There's a huge difference between, you know, starting out at 2 to 3% inflation where we are today and hyperinflation. So we have a lot of room to experiment, and what I would say is let's experiment, because the cost of higher unemployment, you know, if we have the unemployment rate 1 percentage point or 2 percentage points higher than is necessary, that's a huge cost to society. So I would say let's push down the unemployment rate, and then if we see evidence that there's a serious problem with inflation, well, then you try to raise the unemployment rate if that's what you have to do. But that should definitely be a last recourse, because that's a huge cost to a lot of people if you have a higher unemployment rate than necessary. Okay, so the question is, suppose we could have, you said 3% unemployment? 3% unemployment, and that would mean a higher inflation rate, but, you know, a stable inflation rate. So we could have, let's say, 3% unemployment associated with 6% inflation. Actually, I think if someone were even a believer in Nehru were, you know, if they accepted that set of facts, you know, that we could have 3% unemployment and a stable 6% inflation rate, I think they would have to say that you'd be a fool not to do that, because the cost of a stable inflation rate are really very small. The argument, again, this is sort of interesting if you go back in the literature and you go, okay, what exactly is the big problem with inflation? You know, suppose we have 3% inflation or 4% inflation. What exactly, why is that a big problem? And the argument's supposed to go that people make mistakes, that, you know, we want everyone to make the right decisions. They want to, you know, if firms are investing, they're deciding, you know, should we be building more computers? Should we be putting more in healthcare research or whatever? They want to have clear signals from the prices to decide where they invest. Okay, if I'm thinking of buying a home, I want to know, you know, what's the interest rate I'm paying adjusted for inflation. So we want to have people have clear signals. And if the inflation rate's 3%, we're more likely to make mistakes because we thought that, you know, computers are going up in price because, you know, they went up 3.5%, but actually that's just part of general inflation. We get people to make mistakes. Well, you go, okay, how big a deal is that? How many people make mistakes like that? What's the cost of, you know, they thought the inflation was going to be 3 and it's actually 3.5 or 4. What's the cost of that? You're pretty hard-pressed to say that that's very much. So if you talk about 6% inflation and it's stable, you're very hard-pressed to say what the big cost of that is. So, you know, if someone really accepted that story, I think they'd be hard-pressed to say why you wouldn't just live with 6% inflation and take advantage of having the opportunity of a very low unemployment rate. I'll just throw in one more thing on this. This is kind of jumping ahead. Next week I'm supposed to be talking about financial bubbles. But one of the things that, you know, has really, you know, I just find crazy, you have the conventional wisdom within the profession, and certainly, you know, mouthed by Greenspan and Bernanke as well, we don't worry about financial bubbles. So Greenspan's position about, you know, the stock market bubble in the 90s was, yeah, I saw the bubble, but that's not my problem. You know, when it crashes, that's my problem. Okay, now think about that for a second. You had the stock market rising to double its normal values. You had a lot of mistakes in investment. You had a lot of internet companies that didn't know what the hell they were doing, that were raising hundreds of millions or billions of dollars of capital, throwing it in the garbage. Now, how could that not be concerned to you when you're so concerned that you might have a 3.5% inflation rate? I mean, to me, that's just kind of nutty. But that's in effect the story. The story why we're real upset about, you know, inflation is that people make mistakes, you know. But again, they don't seem concerned about the mistakes people make when you have these financial bubbles and they make wrong investment decisions. Yes?
Yeah, 94 to 2000, you said Greenspan.
Yeah. The conventional view, I mean, I shouldn't say, the question is, you know, Greenspan in 94 said, or 95, that he saw things in the data that, or he saw an acceleration of productivity. I'll explain more carefully. The question is, what was it that Greenspan saw in 94, 95 that I didn't accept? You know, he claimed that this was his basis for allowing the unemployment rate to fall. Well, Greenspan said that there was an uptick in productivity growth in 95, 96, but it wasn't yet showing up in the data. Okay, the data was mismeasuring productivity, so was his argument. So then what he said was that he thought the economy could grow more rapidly. This is, again, they shifted the Nehru into an argument about growth. It's not an argument about growth, but they were framing it as an argument about growth. So at the time, they thought the economy couldn't grow, let's say, more than 2.5% a year. And what Greenspan said was, well, no, we haven't measured productivity growth accurately, so therefore the economy can actually grow 3.5% a year, because productivity growth is actually more rapid than we realize. The reason why that doesn't make sense is that if we were mismeasuring productivity growth, we were also mismeasuring economic growth by basically the same amount. So what the story was, if we believe Greenspan, productivity was growing more rapidly than we thought because our numbers are bad. So we thought productivity growth was 1%, it's actually 2%. Well, if we're mismeasuring productivity growth, then we are also undercounting economic growth. So that, because productivity growth is basically economic growth divided by the growth in labor inputs. And there was no question. He wasn't saying we were measuring labor inputs wrong. So if Alan Greenspan was right that we were mismeasuring productivity growth, it was actually 2% when our numbers showed 1%, then we're also mismeasuring GDP growth, it was already 3.5%. So he wasn't making an argument that the economy could grow faster. He was making an argument that it's already growing faster. So, as I say, what he was saying there literally was nonsense. But if that's what you have to do to justify letting the unemployment rate fall from 6% to 4%, fine by me. Yeah, the question is, in the 70s, we did have high unemployment and high inflation. You know, why was that the case in the 70s, and why not in the period 94 to 2000? I'm not going to be able to give you a simple answer to that, but, you know, sort of the quick story, I would say, is that we were coming off this period in the 60s of very good economic growth, strong productivity growth. Productivity growth collapsed in the 70s. And sort of the obvious story, to me at least, is that we had the oil price shock. So OPEC sent oil prices through the roof in 74, 75. The oil shocks sent oil prices through the roof. That pushed up inflation. It also slowed productivity growth, because the basic story is that when oil prices get very high, you decide to conserve energy, use more labor, so productivity fell. And to get rid of inflation, the Federal Reserve Board raised interest rates, threw the economy into a recession. You have go into a recession, productivity growth falls off. My own view is that had we let the economy keep going, you know, if we hadn't been so determined to get rid of inflation in the 70s, if we'd let the economy continue to grow, productivity growth actually would have picked up again, but we never gave it that opportunity. So there was so much concern about inflation that we strangled the economy in 74, 75, threw the economy into, at that time, the steepest recession in the post-war period. Then we started to recover, 78, 79, another big oil shock associated with the Iranian Revolution. Then again, we threw the economy into a severe recession in 80, 81, 82. So my view of that actually is not that there was something qualitatively different about the economy in the 70s from the 60s. What I'd say is that the 70s actually were the 60s with oil shocks, and then the Fed coming in to clamp down on inflation. So I would say the Fed was, as much as anything, the cause of the stagflation. That, you know, what the problem was that they were so determined to wipe out inflation that they weakened economic growth, weakened productivity growth. So I really say they were a very big part of the problem. That's very much against the mainstream of the profession. Mainstream of the profession would say they erred the other way. They let inflation get too high. Anyone didn't ask a question yet? Okay, you get round two. Okay, so the question is, how does it affect purchasing power if you have a steady inflation rate of 6%? Well, you'll never actually see this in the world, but sort of the hypothetical story here is that basically, imagine all of us had our wages indexed perfectly to the inflation rate. So what happens is everything we go and buy, we get food, we get, you know, our rent, everything we go and buy costs us 6% more next year than this year, but our wages also rise 6%. So in that case, we're basically fine. Everything's covered. So if you actually had the world like that, it really wouldn't matter to us. Obviously, we'd be better off if we got the 6% pay increase and no inflation, but, you know, but everything rises at the same rate. Okay, John, I'll let you ask a question.
You were talking about the oil prices in the 70s. Do you think the same thing will happen this time with the increase in oil prices that happened in the 70s?
Okay, the question is, you know, I was raising the issue of the oil price hikes in the 70s. Will we have the same issue with oil prices today as we did in the 70s? I actually think we will have some of those problems. This is where things get very, very interesting. I mean, it's a perverse way of putting it. There's been a lot of folk wisdom in the media where they're saying, you know, the economy is immune to oil price increases. It's not like it was in the 70s. They said the exact same thing back in 2000, and we did have some uptick in inflation. It didn't get me scared, but it got a lot of other people scared. Now, what I think is likely to happen is that increases in oil prices will be passed on to some extent in finished goods, and I think that I sure hope to some extent in higher wages. I mean, as it is, workers have been taking on the chin, so that if you look at the pace of wage growth over the last year and a half, even as oil prices have soared and people are paying, it's down a little bit now, but as much as $3 a gallon for gas, workers haven't been getting any pay increases to compensate for that. Now, I do believe, and my guess, here's my prediction, we get the data tomorrow, wage growth is going to be up somewhat, that I think we are going to see somewhat more rapid wage growth, basically workers trying to get back some of the losses that their experiences in purchasing power due to higher gas prices and home heating oil prices. So I actually think we will see somewhat of an uptick in inflation. Now, here's the question, what do you do about it? Well, the Dean Baker recipe is nothing you can do about it. You can't push the oil down by throwing the economy into a recession. Well, you can sort of a very backward way. If the whole world goes into a recession, oil prices will fall. But it's a very backward way. My view is, you know, you let the economy continue to grow, try and keep productivity on track, which the best way to keep productivity on track is letting the economy grow. And, you know, for a period of time, you have some uptick in inflation, you live with it. What I suspect the response of the Greenspan Bernanke Fed is, no, 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 we can't let inflation get out of hand. What we have to do is raise interest rates. And they've already been raising interest rates. What I suspect is they'll probably raise interest rates even more rapidly. So I don't know if they'll begin to raise interest rates more rapidly. Their next meeting's in December, so I don't know if it'll be then, or they'll, you know, start to, you know, maybe just carry it on longer sometime next year. But my guess is that we are going to see more inflation than most people are anticipating because, first and foremost, the oil price increases, and that is likely to lead to, in my view, the wrong reaction of the Fed, that they'll deliberately raise rates to try and squeeze that out. Yeah.
Do you think that'll be a higher mortgage rate?
Yes. This is the question is, if Greenspan raises the short-term rate, will that lead to higher mortgage rates? Greenspan, I don't want to go off in great length on this, but Greenspan has been really bothered. He calls it a conundrum that, you know, here he is, he's been raising the short-term rate for a year and a half. He started at 1%, we're now at 4%, and mortgage rates, they have started to rise a little bit just in the last couple of weeks. But as of 6 months ago or 5 months ago, the mortgage rate was actually lower than when he began raising rates to begin with. So he's going, why is that? Well, I think the simple answer to it is, well, we have three central banks that affect the U.S. economy right now. One is the Fed. The other is the Japanese central bank. The other is the Chinese central bank. And what's going on is Greenspan is playing around with the short-term interest rate. The Japanese and Chinese central banks get right in there, and they affect the long-term interest rates because they buy long-term bonds. So Greenspan's policy is he wants to slow the U.S. economy by raising short-term rates, which he hopes will also raise long-term rates. The policy of the Chinese and Japanese central banks is they want to keep the market for their exports in the U.S. growing, which means they want to keep our long-term interest rates down, so they intervene in those markets and they keep the long-term interest rates down. So that's what they've been doing. I don't think they'll continue to do that, but that's what they've done to date. And back, yeah, you, no.
I've been concerned about the core inflation rate versus...
Okay, so the question is that the... Well, the Federal Reserve Board is focused on what's called the core inflation rate, which is usually the consumer price index, or they sometimes use the consumption deflator in the GDP accounts. Not worth getting into the distinction about that. And that excludes food and energy prices. And the question is, you know, is it the case that, you know, that's ignoring a lot of costs that people are seeing in the form of higher tuition, higher house prices, higher medical care costs? And the answer is, yeah. I mean, there's a real disconnect there because they're not there to protect your cost of living. The idea is that they're focused on prices. There are prices in the economy rising rapidly. So they're not thinking, you know, your cost of living is getting too high. I got to jack up interest rates and slow the economy and throw people out of work. They're saying, you know, we have this problem, prices in the economy. So that may or may not mean what you're paying is rising more rapidly. And there is a real disconnect there. They are really looking at very, very different things. So just to give you a couple examples, home prices, when those go up, that's not in the price indices. Okay, the price indices are looking at rents. So if prices for homes have doubled in the last 5 years, which they have in places like D.C., that's not in there, not at all. You know, what's there is a rental component, which has shown actually a relatively small increase over that period. A lot of people are paying much more for health care because they have higher copays on their job. Higher deductibles, that's not picked up at all. What they're measuring is, does it cost more today for open heart surgery than it did last year? So they're not measuring what you're doing by copays. So prices people see are very, very different than the prices that the Fed is looking at when it decides, you know, is inflation getting out of hand? Okay, two more questions. Yes. Good question. So the question is, we've been running up a lot of debt in the last few years. Does the Fed have a responsibility to say that, you know, this is a bad policy, you know, that we shouldn't be running up so much debt and that's going to cause problems for the economy down the road? I actually would take a narrow view on that. One of the objections I've had to Greenspan's 10 years, that he's felt increasingly authorized to lend his his opinion on just about everything in the world. So he'd comment on NAFTA, on trade policy, on Social Security, the minimum wage. I don't know anything at this point. He hasn't, you know, he probably even was saying who should have won the World Series, you know. Greenspan gets his 2 cents on everything. I sort of like the old days when the Fed chair pretty much stuck to monetary policy. So, you know, there's blame is shared in the sense that members of Congress were always hoping to draw him out and say, oh, we'll get the wisdom of this great man because he's going to agree with us. So they prompted him. But I think it's really better for the Fed chair to try and stick to what actually is his area of expertise more nearly, which is monetary policy. And, you know, I could agree that, you know, the deficits have been too large. They'll have to be kept under control. But I don't think it's necessarily the Fed's job to make that pronouncement. Okay, last question. Okay, so the question is, can we sort of link up how many people will lose their jobs as the Fed raises interest rates? And I'd have to say there's no strict correlation there. And I guess, well, two reasons. One is, if you keep in mind what interest rate the Fed's raising, they're raising a short-term rate. And here's Alan Greenspan. You know, in some ways, he looked kind of stupid. He's lucky the press likes him so much because, you know, there he was. You know, he in June of 2004, he's got 1% as the short-term interest rate. He's been raising a quarter-point interval. So there he is, June of 2005. He's up to 3%, I think maybe even 3.25% at that point. I'd have to check the calendar. And the long-term rate was actually lower in June of 2005 than it was in 2004. So he looks really stupid. He's been trying to slow the economy for the last year, and it's gone the wrong way. Well, that part is very unpredictable. In this case, you know, here he is, he's raising the short-term rate and basically had very, very little impact on the economy because the long-term rate fell. Okay, so that's part of the story. The second is, let's say the long-term rate had risen. Well, it varies. You know, sometimes a higher long-term rate is going to have a big impact on the economy. Sometimes it'll have very small. My guess is right now, long-term interest rate, and you'll get the full story next week if you come back, if that goes up, it's going to have a very big impact because we have a bubble in the housing market. And if the long-term interest rate were to rise, let's say by 1 percentage point, which isn't huge, it's big, but it often rises by that much, I think it'll burst the bubble, and that's going to have a huge impact on the economy. But there are other times where the long-term interest rate could go up by 1 percentage point, and I won't say it'd be no effect, but it'll just be, you know, be a small blip. You know, you might notice a little slowdown. So there's not a simple correlation there. So I think other things equal, you could say in general, you raise interest rates, you're talking about slowing the economy, but we can't draw a picture and say, okay, Greenspan raised the interest rate by a quarter point, we just threw 50,000 people out of work. Not so if we could, but it's not that simple. So thanks.